This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
They did it! The Boston Celtics have surpassed their arch-rival Los Angeles Lakers to become the most decorated franchise in NBA history. Once again, banner number 18 is going up as we welcome you in to this Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line, presented as always by DraftKings. Alongside Michael Lombardi, I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Yes, we will talk a little Stanley Cup. Yes, we will talk plenty of NFL off-season topics throughout the course of the next 2 hours, but there is only one place to start, and that is out there in Boston. Michael, what did you make of the closeout performance from Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and the whole crew out there with the Celtics?
I need a new team. I mean, this is ridiculous, right? I mean, this is, they win another one, 18. I've won one since rooting for the 76ers. Like, this is just, I mean, look, I'm trying to be objective. I was rooting for the Mavs. It's not that I don't like Boston. I do. I respect the hell out of them, but God dang. I mean, when you talk about a team that has dominated basketball in the East, this team has, and credit to them. I mean, we thought they would play well. You bet it. You made money. You're cashing. You're singing today. And, you know, what we found was is they were the best team in the regular season. They were the best defensive team. They defended the rim. All those numbers equated to a 4-1 total, and they get to be the 18th. And I think next year, God willing, they can bring their team back, they're going to be really good. Credit Brad Stevens getting Porzingis in there, getting Drew Holiday. Two really good trades. I know he gave up Marcus Smart to do it, but what a great win for Boston.
And you said it, very rare to see the best team in the regular season be the best team in the postseason and ultimately win an NBA title here. And they, to your point, bringing guys back, are favored to win again next year at a short number, by the way, plus 290, the number to repeat as champions in 2025. And for this Boston team, final score 106-88. They were up 21 at half. The dagger from Peyton Pritchard with the halftime shot. Bang,
oh
from Mike Breen. Was that not unbelievable?
Well, I mean, did you hear everybody click their TV off as the ball swished through the net? I mean, the whole East Coast, other than people that are Celtic fans, went to bed. I mean, that was the end of it. I mean, if you know, that was it. Like, there was no longer any suspense. When it went swish, you heard click. Okay, on to something else. I mean, seriously, you know, look, we knew they were going to shoot better than they did in the other game, and they came out and they got it over with quickly, which is what you want to be able to do. They have dominant. I mean, this, what's fascinating about this series is Indiana gave them a harder time. They really did. If you want to be honest about it, and I am, is Indiana had a chance to win game one. I thought Carlisle blew that one. Had a chance to win game three. They couldn't close it. I mean, Dallas, it wasn't like they couldn't close it. Dallas couldn't stay even with them. And I think what Kyrie Irving said after the game is right. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what we do moving forward.
Yeah, they missed some golden opportunities. And I, like you, going into the series, was certainly rooting for Dallas. You know, that was the team that felt like the underdog you wanted to cheer for. And then by the time we got moving in the series, I wanted to root for my bank account instead. And so, yes, I loved this laying the 6.5 yesterday. I finally, producer Elliot Bowman
Never
and I were
doubt.
Both joking
Never
about,
doubt.
Well, because we loved going into the series, the over 5.5 games, right? So I just got to the point where I'm betting off of this. I'm betting Boston every single game at this point. And then also what's interesting too, Michael, is the unders here, because we talked to Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata in Atlantic City yesterday. He told us every game of this series, we have taken over money. Yesterday, we saw that game bet up from 209.5 to 211.5. It goes under again. All five games of this series ultimately end up going under the posted total. So good on you if you thought it was going to be an under series, because that leads the way. And how about Jaylen Brown not only being Eastern Conference Final MVP, but now the NBA Finals MVP. And I got to admit, I was a little bit surprised, especially considering how high Tatum ultimately got bet up. It was minus 300 for him to be the Finals MVP. He was trying. I saw Mitch Moss tweeting about this yesterday. He was doing everything he could to pull out the stops to win that honor. You know it. And it still goes to Jaylen Brown.
Well, I mean, he had, again, in 1-for-7. The only game he really shot half decent was when you bet him to go over the 2.5 on the 3-point line. He must have known you were behind it.
What a guy.
And so that was the only game he actually hit. Yeah, exactly. What a guy, adding to the Stormy bank account. But seriously, he played. I thought after last night, I thought that game, 31 points, 11 assists, 8 rebounds, I thought that was going to get the recency bias to him to win. Mm-hmm. But look, Brown was, and Brown shot 7 for 23. It wasn't like Brown had his best game. But when you look at the numbers, Brown was plus 20 in the game. Holiday was, I mean, to me, it should have been Brown or Holiday for the MVP. I know Tatum's their best player, but the guys that do the little things the best are Tatum and Brown. And White, really, frankly.
And also the defensive job, right, just in general that Jaylen Brown did on Luka. I love that mic'd up sound that we got of him talking to Joe Mazzulla about saying, like, you need to take the ball up the court. That's the only way you're going to get it. And then I just thought that approach from him was awesome. Just to give you a little backfill of the numbers here, Jaylen Brown going into this series was plus 650 to be finals MVP, received 14% of the betting handle, 16% of bets behind Tatum and Doncic. And then as we get to ahead of this announcement being made, so Brown enters yesterday minus 235 as the favorite. Then throughout the game, Tatum goes off right before the award is announced. He's still getting plus 255. So it's just really, really cool to see the back and forth, how things change in these markets, where you can capitalize and get opportunities for plus money. But also because this was about Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown coming together. You talked about the job that Brad Stevens has done, the pieces that he brought in, not separating the two of them when everybody said they should be separated. And Jason Tatum talked post game about silencing those doubters and critics.
These last 7 years have been a roller coaster, up and down. I had to listen to all the shit that people said about me. And tonight, it was worth it. Oh my God.
Jason, I'm curious to know what you said to Deuce after this, but I guess I'm more curious, what did Deuce say to you?
He told me that I was the best in the world. And I said, you damn right I am.
Deuce is his son, by the way, who some of the shot down low after the game of them hugging each other, the pictures that we saw on social media afterwards of his raising him over his head, unbelievable. But what did you think of Tatum's comments after the game?
I mean, look, I think that they are a well-constructed team. And I thought what Brad Stevens said about the way he looks for talent in this. Remember, Brad Stevens moves up to become the president. He had no experience in roster construction other than what he did at Butler University, but he embraced it. And I know he spent a lot of time with Coach Belichick. I know he talked with a lot of people in the Patriots organization, used to come to our practices. And I think what Tatum talked about there is exactly what Brad Stevens wants from the most of the team. You know, he wanted self-aware players. Who are you? If you're self-aware, I can coach you. If you're self-aware, we can bond together as a team. But when you lack self-awareness, when you think you're better than you really are, or when your ego's involved, we can't improve your talent base. And I think this team showed exactly what Brad wanted. A lot of guys who were self-aware, from Derek White to Drew Holiday to Jaylen Brown and ultimately to Jason Tatum. And so when I started this show complaining about them winning their 18th, you know, I sit here and look at the process, mm-hmm. how it's great. And all these Sixer fans, me included, I was never one of them, thinking it was going to work when Tatum went the third pick in the draft. And, oh, by the way, Markez Fultz was the first pick. He's not even on the team. Al Horford was once on the team, now wins the title. I mean, it's comical. But I think what it shows you more than anything, Stormy, is they had a plan. They know who they were, and they found self-aware players. And Tatum backed that up with those statements.
And this is a team, as you referenced off the top, that has potential now to be good for a long time coming. This title also marks the 13th championship won this century by one of Boston's big four professional sports franchises, the long-suffering Boston fan base. My goodness. And they were all out in full force. Shout out our guy.
They're going to suffer soon. Don't worry. They're going to have some suffering
okay,
this
fair.
Year. Don't you worry
fair.
Now.
But they got enough rings in all the sports. We're all sick of it, okay? And they were out in full force. DraftKings Network host Emerson Lazia out there in Boston. He hit the town to get the reaction from the fans. Watch this.
Oh, no.
A little throwback. How we feeling, baby?
We're feeling real good, baby. Anything is possible.
We have tears. Are these happy tears?
Yeah, absolutely.
Banner 18.
Let's go!
Anything is possible. I love like the throwback to Garnett and Tatum basically does it. We did it after the game, all of that. But I mean, Boston fans are just insufferable. It's going to be a lot. Like, hey, what are we supposed to do? What are the rest of us supposed to do?
Think about us, about the 76ers. We basically cut Al Horford, give a first round pick away. They got him on a championship team. You know, they draft Tatum third pick overall. They swindle the 76ers. I mean, if you're Josh Harris, how do you even look in the mirror? Like, seriously, if you're the 76ers owner, you know, you've been lamboozled by this franchise forever. You're not getting closer to him. I love Embiid. He goes on TV and says, I hate the Celtics. Well, if you hate the Celtics, maybe you'll get in shape. Maybe you would get in shape. That might be a novel idea, huh?
It always comes back to that with your boy Joel Embiid, which, by the way, we will be showing a clip of Joel in just a little bit coming up in the next segment because we got news or noise coming up in a moment. I am also curious because we've talked a lot this week about how the NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup Final have a lot of parallels. We saw the blowout game from the team that was down 3-0 in game 4. Will we see the bounce back by the Florida Panthers tonight the way we did from the Boston Celtics last night? We'll have to wait and see. Bearing the lead here, I certainly hope so, as somebody who has bet Florida in every which way possible that you can. Okay, we have to take a quick commercial break here, Michael, but we are in a day and age in 2024 where players negotiate via social media. So got a headline there we have
to
discuss.
Sure they do, of course.
Also, as the college football landscape continues to change, could this be a way to encourage fewer bowl opt-outs? Lots of headlines to get to. Are they news? Are they noise? We'll dissect it all when we come back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you like watching and listening to VSiN, don't forget about all the amazing betting tools and content at VSiN.com. We got best bets from hosts and guests, betting splits, pro tips, trends, and of course, best practices. And right now on the homepage, will the Panthers secure their first title in franchise history? Our resident NHL expert, Johnny Lazarus, has a full Game 5 breakdown for tonight's Stanley Cup Final. Thoughts on the side, total, and approach to the prop market. All up now at VSiN.com.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise?
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise. This is noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
Michael, we started the show commiserating about your NBA team, so now let's do it about my NFL team for a moment. 49ers wide receiver Brandon Ayuk has taken his contract negotiations to TikTok, telling his former ASU teammate turned quarterback for the Washington Commanders, Jaden Daniels, that the 49ers, quote, don't want me back. Here's the clip.
What? They said they don't want me back. I swear.
So if you couldn't hear it, Ayuk says they don't want me back. Daniel says that's it. Ayuk responded, I swear. And then the Daniels yell. At first when I saw this video, Michael, I said, did his girlfriend really post this? No, he posted this himself. And the caption says, I'm laughing, but I'm crying for real. News or noise?
I think it's noise, because if they didn't want him back, I mean, all they'd have to do is they could easily trade him. I think, to me, they want him back. I think the guy that they would try to move would be Debo, because they want an outside receiver. And look, if the contract is too expensive, that could be a kind of a narrative towards wanting to trade him. But I don't get that sense. I get the sense that Debo would be the guy they trade, because they feel like he's not an outside receiver. The Niners need outside receivers. They don't need more inside receivers. And Ayuk is an outside guy. But look, all this stuff, we've seen it. How often are we going to get fooled in June and July with this? They don't want me back. They don't love me. And then, you know, we sign. And I never wanted to. I mean, just remember Lamar? They don't love me. I'm never going back there. Come on.
Michael, just like holding out of OTAs or mandatory minicamp has been part of the I want to get paid playbook, so has unfollowing your team on social media or posting your displeasure for perceived leverage. It's just 2024. This is the world that we live in now. Ayuk entering the final year of his rookie contract, $14.124 million against the cap. The 49ers, a plus 600. Second shortest shot to win the Super Bowl in 2024-25. Okay, HBO and NFL Films, Michael, have announced Hard Knocks in season will be of not just one team, but the entire AFC North. News or noise?
Oh, I think this is news. This is going to be fascinating to watch because, you know, we're going to be able to see them compete against one another. We'll go inside of Cincinnati, which will be fun to see, which usually in November they're playing better. There's, you know, what's Baltimore going to look like in November when we get into them? Are they going to be as good as they were last year? Pittsburgh, will it be time for Justin Fields? Will they be pondering? There's so many storylines here, Stormy. So many of them. And then, of course, there's Cleveland. Where are we with Deshaun Watson? I don't know if they could have picked anything better than this. I'm sure Will Hill, who we'll have on in the next block, was instrumental in making this happen because this is brilliant. Because each team has so many good storylines to talk about. Even if they win, they have great storylines.
Tons of storylines, intrigue, toughest division in football. I mean, just the quarterbacks alone, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, and Justin Fields. I think it's going to be awesome. In the AFC North, the Ravens are a plus 130 favorite, followed by Cincinnati, plus 145. The Browns are 6-1, and the Steelers the longest shot there at plus 850. In college football, Michael, so interesting development over the last couple months. Snoop Dogg, who will sponsor this year's Arizona Bowl, recently announced the game will be the first to provide NIL deals for competing players, a model that some believe could become a new norm for bowl games to incentivize stars to play. For the last decade, the number of players opting out of bowl games has steadily increased, with players preferring to prepare for the NFL draft or hit the transfer portal early. Could this be reality in the near future, and would it work? News or noise?
I think this is news, and I think it could work. I mean, he's taken over the Barstool game, which drew nobody there. I mean, remember the game in Tucson? I mean, there were so many empty seats. So hopefully we'll get people to go to this game, and they'll get a good game. But I think Snoop Dogg's right. I mean, if you want the guys to show up, pay them in the game. And I think NIL money will help. But look, this NIL thing is going to have to get corrected. The players deserve to get paid. No one's arguing that. However, that being said, there's got to be some way to balance this up a little bit to where there is level competition, because right now the teams with the money are the ones that are going to get all the players.
Yesterday, we reacted a lot to the U.S. Open, and Rory McIlroy posted a lengthy statement about the experience and ultimately closing with he'll be withdrawing from the Travelers coming up this week. Quote, I'm going to take a few weeks away from the game to process everything and build myself back up. He mentioned a couple things he will, quote, rue over the course of the tournament, mostly, of course, those two missed putts on 16 and 18 the final day. But he says he'll try to look at the positives of the week that far outweigh the negatives, trying to get back to himself, Michael. News or noise, Rory McIlroy taken off this week and trying to get back to defend the Genesis Scottish Open and the British Open.
Well, I think it's definitely news because, I mean, who would expect him to go and play again? I think he should go play again. I think he needs to get out there and just kind of settle himself down and get back on the horse. I don't think it does, again, run to the roar. I don't think running away from this is going to help you. I think you got to face your reality. And I'm sure he's going to spend some time trying to analyze what he needs to do. But for me, I think you stay in your routine. Look, if you played that well and you are playing well, you got to fight the demons. Nothing's going to happen at home that's going to help you. You're just going to get the yips, and that's what you're scared of. And you got to go out there and do it. It's like a writer who doesn't want to write every day. You're not going to be able to create anything. I think, to me, I know it's hard to get out there and you have to answer the questions. But that's part of being a professional. Professionals go on, and we move on, and we do it. I think, to me, if I were advising Rory, I'd say, Rory, get your butt up there and play. Let's go. If you committed to play, if you say you're going to be somewhere, be somewhere.
He also said in the statement, as I said at the start of the tournament, I feel closer to winning my next major championship than I ever have. The one word I would use to describe my career is resilient. I've shown my resilience over and over again the last 17 years, and I will again. As far as the British Open,
he needs to stop talking about winning championships. That's his biggest problem. Is why is he talking about it? He is basically letting the media get inside his head. Like, look, we all know you want to win championships. Don't talk about it. Look, it's about playing well. If I play well, I'm going to win. But now you're putting yourself into the future. You put yourself in the present. Look, I just got to play really well tomorrow. That's it. Any champion, that's how they think. Professionals think in the moment. Amateurs think about titles. And I think that's why he's not getting the right advice.
I think, too, like when you're being asked about it incessantly, when you are on social media and you're seeing the comments that you see, it's so easy to say, oh, don't read anything. But how easy is that to actually do? Rory McIlroy, though, second shortest shot to win the British Open behind only Scottie Scheffler. His odds there, 7-1. Okay, we talked about your boy in segment one. We're going to show the clip here because last Friday during game four of the finals, Joel Embiid was on the NBA countdown desk, as was Paul George. Embiid made the comment and a facial gesture heard around the world. Let's show our audience here.
As we see the Boston Celtics getting ready to close the deal and win a championship, what does that have you thinking about as a member of the Philadelphia 76ers?
I can't stand this. Hopefully, you know, this offseason we find a way to get better and, you know, add some pieces.
In the replay of the cartoon style eyes. Okay, so obviously this set the internet on fire for a radio and podcast audience. He's looking directly with wide eyes at Paul George talking about adding pieces. Michael, it's very fun for us to consume this type of content, but in your opinion, is this news or is it noise?
Well, I mean, it is news. I mean, but the fact is we need more players. Look, you need to get in shape. I mean, you're never healthy to play against Boston. So what good is it? What good are having the players if you're not healthy? See, this is where everybody's eye leaves the target. You know, Rory, I'm going to compete for majors. No, you compete to play good. You know, Joel, you should be good enough that if you're healthy and in great shape, you can go out there and play Boston against anybody. But Boston knows those two things are never going to happen, you being in great shape and healthy. So they're never really even worried about you. They respect you, but they're not worried about you.
I just love that it always comes back to just work out, Joel Embiid. Just get in shape. My goodness.
Just go get in shape. You wonder why he's hurt all the time. I mean, like, seriously, why am I the only one who says it? Everybody in the NBA says it, too, but they'll be scared to say it. Like, get in shape. Get in shape. The reason you're hurt all the time is you're not in shape.
Paul George, -215 to stay with the Clippers, but those 76ers are the second shortest shot at +280 to land PG in free agency. You got to throw it out there.
Elliot just knows how to irritate the hell out of me.
No, Elliot knows how to make good content. That's what it is, Michael. We are here for the people. Okay, you hear that music. That means we got to take another quick timeout. Coming up on the Lombardi Line, as Michael referenced, VSiN contributor, host of the Should Have Bet More podcast, Will Hill, is going to stop by the show. I know I should have bet more on the Celtics yesterday, if only hindsight, right? Excited to get his pick on the Stanley Cup final, as well as some future win totals in college football and the NFL. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
In just over a week, get excited because our recent NFL betting guide is coming out. This guide is the ultimate resource for all things football season, jam-packed with detailed team, division, and conference analysis. And of course, best bets for the upcoming NFL season. To get the guide, though, you must be a VSiN Pro subscriber. And right now, you can sign up for a VSiN Pro annual subscription for just $199, which is down from our usual price of $240. Plus, when you use the promo code Lombardi, we're throwing in an extra month absolutely free. With a VSiN Pro subscription, you'll get exclusive access to premium analysis, expert picks, and advanced betting tools that'll give you an upper hand all year long. Don't miss your chance to sign up, though. Save ahead of the NFL season. VSiN.com/subscribe and use that promo code Lombardi to claim your discount in bonus month. Now, I am about as excited about our next guest as the fans in TD Garden were last night for Peyton Pritchard's halftime buzzer beater. Let me just say that. Welcome to the show, Will Hill, on the Progressive Guest Line, host of the Should Have Bet More podcast. You can also catch him on the Fox Sports Bear Bets pod. All right, how'd you make out on the game last night? And very excited to see your wonderful face. How are we today?
Oh, wow. What an introduction. Stormy must want something or need something. And she's never this nice to me.
I don't know what you're talking about. It's almost like you have to.
That's not the way she is.
It's almost like Will has to fill in on the show next week, and I want him to be nice to me. We'll see.
I didn't do much. I played a couple props. I was kind of rooting for Dallas. I had a feeling that was coming, though, in terms of a Boston romp. I thought the game four, it's fascinating how both game fours have followed the same pattern. Both series have followed the same pattern, the NHL and the NBA, with one team goes up 3-0, the team down 3-0, rolls in game four. I thought that was gonna be a tough place for Dallas to win. And it just, Dallas doesn't have a lot around Luka. And when Kyrie's not going to be really good, there's just not a lot of shooting. There's a reason they were a five seed. You can say, yeah, they added players, but look, it's PJ Washington, it's Gafford. Gafford pretty much got played off the floor at the end of that series. It was just, I don't know, a really good draw for Boston. And it's not to discredit them, because they're, you know, a really good team, the best team. I was probably guilty of underestimating them a little bit, but it was just kind of a blah playoffs where a lot of injuries. And you think about it, Denver, Minnesota played that weird game seven on that Sunday night like a month ago. That's the last time we even got a game six in any of these series. All the conference finals were either four or five. This one went five. Just not a lot of excitement. It was just kind of a ho-hum playoffs. A lot of injuries, a lot of blowouts, and Boston's the champion here. So not much to add. I'm happy. Jeff Van Gundy, I don't know if you guys saw this, got his ring. He was a consultant for the Celtics. Now he's going to go be the lead assistant for the Clippers. So I was happy for him. I will say the ESPN coverage could probably use him, because between their halftime stuff, their pregame stuff, their game coverage, that's you don't get a lot in terms of that. I think they could probably just keep Mike Breen and start from scratch otherwise. But Boston's the champ, and they deserve a champ here.
Well, I mean, it's amazing. You can span the globe. I agree with you. I mean, Nick, Jeff did a great job of mentoring and contributing, as Brad Stevens said, so that's going to help him. All right, so if you think the trend is going to follow, I see you lean Edmonton in game five. That doesn't fit the trend, though.
It doesn't. I'm not going crazy with this. I've just, from watching this, from hearing all the hockey guys on VSiN, it seems like Florida, Edmonton, this is different than Boston, Dallas, where Boston was the much better team than Dallas. Seems like these two teams are more evenly matched. Stormy, I don't know if you'd agree with that, where this could easily probably be 2-2, where Edmonton's had their chances here with you know, a lot of shots and goal, things like that. So I just think sometimes you can't go wrong here taking the plus money with the road team. I know home ice is held up in this series, but throughout the NHL playoffs, home ice hasn't meant a lot. I don't know, Stormy, if you had to play this game, would you take the plus money, or do you think Florida closes this out?
So I laid minus 135 with Florida. I honestly like a regulation price as well. You can get plus 115, plus 120-ish on that. I am of the belief that, and I agree with what you're saying, just in terms of, like, hockey is such a fickle sport and puck luck is a real thing, and a game can swing from 4-2 to 4-4 like that, right? It's different from the NBA, I think, in that standpoint. But I do feel like Florida is going to close things out on home ice today. I think that, like, they got the bad game out of their system. Every series so far this postseason, Sergei Bobrovsky, the Florida netminder, has had at least one bad game, and they have bounced back with a vengeance the following game. So I personally think that Florida closes it out, but going into the series, I did think it was one that had the potential to go seven. And when you have the best player in the world, anything is up for grabs. I'm just on Florida tonight, personally.
Is there a bet for Conn Smythe here? I know Bobrovsky was like minus 500 before that disaster in game four. And now he's the dog in some spots, where it's just a toss up between him and Barkov. I don't buy this idea. I'm curious what you think, that McDavid could win on a losing team. I just don't think we give the MVPs to these losing teams. I know it's for the whole playoffs. Maybe hockey's different. I can't see it going to a losing player, but do you have anyone you would take for Conn Smythe?
I've fought against that narrative as well. I'm not of the belief that Connor McDavid, even with him breaking Gretzky's assist record for the playoffs and all of the things, I mean, he has definitely been the guy where, when everybody else has struggled throughout the course of this series to be productive in those early games, he was still the assist maker. He was still making things happen. I just don't think that you're going to give it to a skater on a losing team. For me, I think the fact that you can still get even money or a plus money price on Sergei Bobrovsky, that would be the bet if there was one to be made right now. But the way that things have gone over the last couple of games, you could have gotten such better numbers on either Sasha Barkov or Sergei Bobrovsky. But as far as right now, what is bettable, I would say the plus money on Bobrovsky makes the most sense.
Yeah, and it's just those two, right?
It would be just one of them. That is all.
Is there an in-game betting aspect either one of you like for this game?
Will, you got anything?
No, I do like to bet the unders as the series go on. Game six and game seven usually trend towards under. I'm not a huge trend guy, but it makes sense. The higher the stakes, once the elimination becomes a factor, I think it's rarely wrong to play under. I know it's tricky to play the under after you see an 8-1 game, but if I had to play anything, I'd play under.
Yeah, harder forechecking game, better defense overall, despite what we saw in that last game. Nothing for me. Like, this isn't a game that, like, whereas in the NBA, we go into a lot of games with that live betting perspective and angles and trying to jump on numbers. I don't do that as much in hockey unless there's something that is like blatant and obvious that you want to jump on. I'm not going in with any like preconceived plan to live bet this game. But I do want to look at some futures as well. Will Hill, host of the Should Have Bet More podcast, joining us here via the Progressive guest line. Now is the time where we have college football game of the year lines that are out. We have college football futures, totals, conference markets available. Anything that you've looked at here early in June?
I love Clemson under 9.5 wins. I played them last year under, and it's the same philosophy. It's the same sort of thinking where, look, you and I, us as fans, we cannot like NIL and the transfer portal and all these changes to college football. But it's one thing if you're the coach and you don't like it. And Dabo Swinney, I just think, hasn't adjusted to this new climate where he doesn't do the transfer portal. He's very against the NIL, and he just doesn't play the game. And a lot of these coaches, you've seen Saban, you've seen Jay Wright, you've seen a lot of these coaches retire from college because they don't like it. But if you're going to be in college, you kind of have to play the game and go shopping at the portal and do the NIL thing. And I just don't think they're great at quarterback. I'm not a fan of Klubnik at all. That's a tough schedule. They start off, nothing's an automatic loss, but against Georgia on the road, two touchdown underdogs, which, look, the odds makers are telling you they don't think Clemson's in that neighborhood anymore. Stuff to go at Florida State, at Virginia Tech, some of these other ACC teams that I know a lot of people think are be better, like NC State. The ACCs might be, it's not top heavy. It's not like anybody from there is probably going to win a national championship, but you have a bunch of pretty good teams. I just think that getting to 10 wins with that schedule is going to be difficult. You do have to lay some juice. I've seen minus 150, minus 160. I think it's worth it. I don't think they get to 10 wins. It is interesting. You go to DraftKings, they organize these season win totals by conference, and it is very strange when you go through these ACC teams and you see SMU, you see Cal. It just, it kind of blows your mind. But I don't think this team's getting to 10 wins. I don't like the quarterback, and I just don't think they are they're up to snuff with these with the new way of college football. They just really haven't adjusted. And when he hasn't had Deshaun Watson or Trevor Lawrence, he hasn't really been in the mix for a national title. I think that'll continue here.
How about the Seattle? You like them over. New coach, new defensive scheme, still Geno Smith. Maybe the offensive line will be healthy, but you like them over 7.5?
Yeah, I don't like playing a lot of overs because I think when you play the over, people forget like what can go wrong. You lose your quarterback, you're probably going to lose your over bet. Well, with Seattle, you have an insurance policy there with Howell, which, I mean, I wouldn't say they're equal, but they're at least comparable, where if Geno Smith got hurt or didn't play well, Howell could step in and play just fine, I think. And I really like their receivers. And you know, you look at the schedule, it starts out pretty easy. So maybe they can get some confidence where you get a home game against Denver, then you get the Patriots. I mean, it's not impossible they win both those games and they get to 2-0. And they do have the Giants on the schedule. Obviously, that's a tough division with San Francisco, but the games against Arizona and the Rams, you know, maybe you can get a split there. They played pretty well against the, they lost both games against the Rams, which kept them out of the playoffs last year, but a terrible loss at home in one of those games. But to me, this is just like a mediocre run-of-the-mill team. There are no 8-8 teams anymore, but if there were, like if you ask me, hey, who's a 500, just an 8-8 team? Seattle comes to mind, but at 7.5 with 17 games, you know, 8-9 gets you home. I just think at 8, I wouldn't play it, but at 7.5, I like the over here.
Hey, Will, give us our weekly 30 seconds of baseball on the show. What do you got today?
I'll take the Orioles at plus money against the Yankees. I don't like Cortez. Doesn't keep the ball on the ground. Gives up a lot of hard contact. So that's a big series there in the Bronx, Yankees and Orioles. That might be the only pennant race for first place with a lot of these divisions teams pulling away. But that's going to be a good race. But I think Baltimore's that's
great
a good
book.
Number.
What was that,
Will,
Michael?
A great book I'm reading. The Yankee Way is a great book. I'm reading that. It's a lot of Patriot, Cleveland Brown grading system within the Yankee Way. Fascinating. Good book.
Who's the author?
I mean, you're asking me. I don't know. I'm just reading it. I forgot. It's the guy who covers it for the Daily News. Thank you. You take a look in between scheduling. Yeah, we appreciate all your scheduling.
I didn't know
too.
That you were doing ESPN personnel as well. If you want to elevate me, that would be pretty cool as another internal person over
that
there.
That would be one of many moves I would make, guys.
I appreciate you, Will. Make sure you check out the Should Have Bet More podcast. You can download today wherever you get your podcast. We're going to hit the break. More Lombardi Line on the other side of this quick timeout.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Michael Lombardi's summer school is in session. 22 NFL teams wrapped up their respective mandatory mini camps last week and will now be hitting their summer break ahead of training camp set to get underway in late July. And just like kids breaking for summer vacation, okay, this is not all fun and games. There is still work to be done. And Michael's got some assignments for each of these teams. We're hitting a handful of them every day this week. Things that teams need to iron out before the pads come on later this summer. So let's start this segment here, Michael, with the Denver Broncos, because they have gone through 13 different starting quarterbacks since Peyton Manning retired in 2015. They are on to lucky number 14 in who we all largely expect to be Bo Nix. But in addition to quarterback, there are a lot of question marks about this team. So what are you having the Broncos focus on most over the next month and a half?
Well, I think it's really important that the Broncos, everybody's going to say it's the quarterback, the quarterback, the quarterback. Well, the quarterback last year was the issue, too. He protected the football, didn't make enough plays in the passing game. But for me, I think a lot of this is they've got to get the offensive line to where it plays to the level where Sean Payton wants it to play. You know, they put money into it. They signed McGlinchey. You know, they still have Garrett Bowles over at left tackle. They're trying to cut down on his holding calls. Marinez is a really good player at right guard. They've got to re-sign him. But to me, this is really about getting that line settled. They're going to run the football effectively, and then they've got to be able to impact the passer rushing, right? Whether it's from Browning, whether it's from anyone else, Cooper, someone coming off the edge. I think the Franklin Myers trade really is going to help them. I think with Zach Allen and Franklin Myers, with DJ Jones inside, they've got a chance to put some pressure. They've got a shutdown corner in Patrick Surtain. So for me, it's about offensive line and can they find that other pass rusher coming off the edge?
Yeah, all very important items. Win total for the Denver Broncos coming up this season, very low, just 5.5. They're the longest shot by far at 18-1 in the AFC West. Yeah. And so with that in mind, okay, in order for them to get over this 5.5, it feels like something that is very doable. With Bo Nix, what are you going to need to see from him early on in the season to believe that they can win games?
Just execute the offense. I mean, they won 8 last year without him, and they didn't beat the Raiders in either game. The Raiders, you know, won the opener, and then they won late in the season on them. So they won 8 games without them. I mean, and this is coming off a 70 to whatever score that was, where they gave up all those points in Miami, 70-20. What I want to see him is execute the offense, because they can – Sean will call enough runs. He's not going to put the game on his shoulders. Sean's going to let him play. And, look, they go into Buffalo. They win in Buffalo. They won some close games last year. They beat the Chiefs at home. They lost to them. They held the Chiefs to 19 points in the first game. They held them to 9 points in the second game. So they know how to play the Chiefs. Now you say, well, the Chiefs' offense wasn't humming. Okay, fair enough, but they still played them really well. They held them to under 250 yards passing in both games. So, look, I'm shocked that this number is so low. Yeah. What they're saying to you with this number is Nix is going to come in and turn the ball over. Okay, well, and they ranked 17th in turnovers last year, in the league. Now, where they were really good was that Wilson didn't turn it over. They're only 4th in interceptions. So what they're saying is the turnovers are going to create more problems.
How about the Green Bay Packers, a very young team overall, led by a young quarterback who's going to be in his second full year of action. They started the season last year 3-6, but then figured something out with Jordan Love. He made the necessary tweaks. They go on a great run the back end of the year, winning 7-9 games. They win a playoff game. What's your assignment for the Green Bay Packers to take another step here in year 2 of the Jordan Love era?
Well, I think obviously it starts with their defense. They hired Jeff Hafley, who's a very close friend of Matt LaFleur. And they've got to play better run defense. They've been so inconsistent defensively in their run defense and their ability to make plays. They've got to get – they've paid Jair Alexander at a high level. They've got to get him to play at a high level. You know, they've put money in their pass rushers. They've got to get Walker to be a good linebacker, Cooper, who they drafted in the second round. But this is about Gary. This is about Preston Smith. This is about Luke Van Ness. This is about – Engabear, the number 55, the rusher from South Carolina who got hurt last year, very good off the edge. So they can rush, but they got to be able to play the run. And I think that's going to be the criteria. Offensively, look, they just got to get that offensive line to play as well as they did last year. If they put Jordan Morgan at left guard and they're good enough there, they can pass protect. they're going to be really good, assuming that the quarterback doesn't make mistakes like he did in the second half of the season.
Jacksonville Jaguars quarterback Trevor Lawrence, of course, gets paid. And whenever anybody gets paid, the next question is, how hungry will you be after that? And can the team win when you're paying your quarterback? And with Trevor Lawrence, he's somebody who's getting paid but hasn't really shown us a whole lot or anything really, largely based on what we thought that he could be coming out of college. This Jags team was an odds-on favorite to win the division going into last season. Ultimately, they end up losing the division to the Houston Texans, who go from worst to first, and now Houston is the team to beat. So what's on the assignment list here for Class Jacksonville?
Well, I think Class Jacksonville, it's all about the quarterback, right? Can we get him to play at a higher level? And I think there's a perception that runs rampant through the league that, well, you know, he was really good with Dougie. Dougie Peterson came in and did a nice job with him. Well, if you study it, it really wasn't that much of a difference, right? It was the same thing. They didn't really make him. He was at 7.0 with the first year, and he went to 7.1. He didn't take that second jump, and he turns the ball over too much. You know, he's got 20 fumbles, and he's got 55 turnovers in two games. In 48 starts, you can't have that. Between the interceptions and the fumbles, it's a problem. And so, to me, everything rests with him. He's got to play at a higher level, and they've got to be able to, Stormy. They've got to take some of the pressure off him. They tried to run the football more last year. I think they need another back besides ATN in there. You know, give him a little bit of a change of pace. You know, I think that would certainly help them, but they've got to be able to figure out a way to run the football with more effectiveness. Last year, they were 24th in yards. They were 30th in yards per attempt. And when that happens, you know, for a guy like Peterson, he just says, hell with it, I'm not going to call runs. You know, we're not gaining anything. We're better off throwing wide stick. We're better off throwing spacing. And then they give up on that stuff. So I think they've got to take some of the pressure off of them. I mean, they're 6th in the National Football League in passing attempts last year, and they were 19th in interceptions. That's not good enough.
Yeah, Trevor Lawrence, 14 interceptions, but an NFL-high 21 turnovers with the 7 lost fumbles as well. Jacksonville's season win total sitting at 8.5. They're a plus 275 shot in the division, plus 130 to make the postseason. How about the Kansas City Chiefs, who, while they are looking to become the first team to three-peat in Super Bowl history, they've had a lot of off-field issues this offseason. As you're looking at Kansas City trying to make history, what's priority one on the assignment list?
I think who's going to be our left tackle? I mean, they drafted the young man out of BYU. I can't say his name. And I don't think that's going to be the guy who starts at tackle. I think that's going to be the bigger issue. You know, I think they got to find a left tackle. And I think that's that what held them up last year. Why did they have to run the ball more last year? Well, because Mahomes is getting hit too much, right? And this Wanai Morris, the kid they drafted in the third round out of Oklahoma, he's got to play at left tackle. So, like, who's the left tackle? And if you study them last year, Taylor, who they signed for big money to be the left tackle, they've had to move him to right tackle. They're not tackle rich here. And one of the reasons they had to revert back to where we saw Pacheco have to run the ball more. He had 14 carries on average during the regular season. He went to 21 after the Christmas Day loss. I think the reason we saw that is because they needed to keep that offensive line, and the quarterback was turning the ball over way too much, trying to force the ball down the field. I think that's number one. Who's the left tackle? And then who's replacing Snead? You know, one of the things they have is they have a really good – Trent McDuffie is a very good inside slot corner. Nickel corner, valuable as hell. Okay, so if they move him on the outside, who's the nickel corner? Is it going to be Connor? I don't know if he can do that. Is it going to be Johnson? They think Johnson could be a really good player. He was out all of last year. So, to me, the corner situation, especially as much as they play man, and then, of course, the left tackle.
Mm-hmm. Win total for Kansas City set at 11.5. They are a plus 500 favorite, the shortest shot to win the Super Bowl this year and ultimately get that three-peat. The BYU tackle, by the way, Kingsley Suamataia. Yeah, that is a mouthful, Michael.
I don't blame you for struggling with that.
No, thank you. Yeah. Last one here. Last 30 seconds. The Vegas Raiders. What's on the agenda for Vegas?
Look, for Vegas, it's all about, can their offensive line hold up? You know, they drafted a center. They've signed two centers. So they have a bunch of centers, but they're only going to play one center. And so I think that's going to be the bigger issue, right? Can these guys that they drafted play center? And I think that's going to be the key, because it's going to be important that Gardner Minshew has a clean pocket, right? I think that's the key. He's got to be able to step up. And if he can't do that, that Andre James is a good center, Parnum's a better center, and Powers Johnson is really belongs there. This is about the quarterback and the ability to throw the football.
Quarterback and the coach will be interesting to see how that develops out here in Las Vegas. We're going to hit the break when we come back, resetting for hour two on the Lombardi Line. We'll hit some NBA and Stanley Cup finals and what's on Michael's mind. We'll be right back.